Welcome back to the jQuery Jumpstart. We'll start off chapter 3 with methods and doing things to the selectors that we learned in the last chapter. Sound good? Okay. So for 3, it's manipulating the DOM. And of course, once we get that element, that wrap set, we need to manipulate it. So we'll look at basic element manipulation. Then we'll do some modifying of attributes, since that's a big deal. Then we'll go on to styling and dimensions with manipulating elements. So element manipulation. We have a selector. Once we've selected our wrap set, we can then run a method on it. And in the case here on the slide, I'm selecting a paragraph, and then I'm resetting its data by calling HTML or text. So that's two ways I can modify element data. So it's the actual content of the element itself. So these are usually paragraphs, divs, and things like that. So this is a great thing we can do, HTML or text. HTML kind of roughly equates to the inner HTML, and text kind of roughly equates to the inner text methods that you might just call out of JavaScript itself. So here you see I have a paragraph and I just reset the HTML to, you know, a staple sentence. Quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. Notice here, if I call the HTML method, I can put some text in here, but I also can just code some elements in here. So in this instance, I have a couple of emphasis elements for the lazy dog. So what that would do is just take that HTML and add that in with the text and HTML. So you can make that as big as you want. You can change it to a really, really big chunk of HTML. The text method does basically the same thing, except you're not going to add in any HTML elements in there. It's going to be just pure text. So if you know, here's another small performance tip. If you know that you're only going to modify text, then call the text method. Don't call HTML. If you call HTML, what is it going to have to do? Well, it has to sort out text and append the HTML in there as well, right? So then, of course, you have some DOM manipulation, and whenever we have that, a little bit of expense. My third sample here is if I take a div and I go to the first paragraph in the div, and then I'm selecting the text. So here we see one of those selectors from the last chapter. I can go to a div, and then in that div, I'm going to go to the paragraph and grab the first one in there. And notice here with the space in my selector, that would be a descendant selector. So I have my div and inside of that a paragraph and the first one. And then I'm setting the text of it. So two great ways to be able to modify the actual data of elements. Of course, we might consider things like the attributes data as well, but in this case, I'm just going for just pure data, the text or the HTML, the element itself, not necessarily the details about it. If we want to modify inside of elements, we can do a couple of things. Now, here's some interesting things. We'll see in jQuery, there are a few methods where we have like sister element or sister methods. So we have append and append to, and prepend and prepend to. So one of the big things that we need to do when we're working with the DOM is put elements in there dynamically. So we need to append or prepend elements all over the place. So we have these two basic syntaxes. The first ones would be that we take the content that we want. So this could be the same stuff that would have been in maybe the HTML method from the last slide or anything like that. And then I could tell it to append to some selector. So it could be, you know, all of the paragraphs or something by class or whatever kind of selector I'm going to use. I'm going to append content to that selector. Same thing with prepend to, except it would append it to the front instead of the rear. The second kind of syntax we have is that we start with the selector and then say append. and then put the content. These all do identical things, append and append to, and prepend and prepend to. It's just that the syntax is a little bit different. So really, it's kind of up to you. Whatever you like, whatever is syntactic sugar for you, is the one that you could use. I kind of like the bottom ones, where you go with the selector first, and then you call append and append the content that you want to it. But other devs like to take the content first and then append it to a selector. Really, it's, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
So again, you're saying there's more than one way to do it.
More than one way. At least in this case, there's really only two ways, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to 50,
yeah.
That often
That's
happens.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So if we want to take a look at a nice little example here, I have some append and prepend twos. So here I just have a nice little page with a drop down that allows us to figure out what we want to do, append or prepend, and run any of these methods. And then here I just have a little bit of content with some paragraphs. Nothing too fancy here, right? Just a few of these elements. And then I have my function called modify element that's going to modify one of these when the button is clicked. So here I'm just going to go ahead with the selector, and I'm grabbing the value of that dropdown that was selected, and I'm grabbing that as my option. So here I could use a selector this way just to get the value, and that's a method as well, of something. So if I have a dropdown or any kind of form element, things like that with the value, it's really nice. So here, once I switch on that, then I'm figuring out which one of these that I'm doing. And as you see here, the syntax shows the same as what was on the slide. So if I do the append to here in my starting selector, I would just append this particular content to the paragraph, or all the paragraphs, actually. And we have four of them. Then if I did append, it's the same exact thing, except the syntax is switched around. And then the same with the prepend and prepend to. If I want to prepend to, I grab my content first, of course in selector syntax, but then I tell it to prepend it to something. And in this case, it's all the paragraphs. And if I just run prepend, here it's the same syntax as the append, except as you see, I'm prepending it instead. So if I bring this up in my browser, here I have my paragraphs. If I go ahead and append, it'll append to them. Or if I pick append to, you see the same thing happens, right? So it adds it on to the end. If I do prepend or prepend to, you can see it adds it to the beginning. All right, so it all works very nicely. And this is something we're gonna do probably like every day. We're always adding DOM elements back and forth. So these are going to be some core functions that you're going to use all the time, as along with val too. And something that you'll notice with the methods, especially if you're a .NET dev, we do methods and properties in .NET. Guess what there's not any of in jQuery? Properties.
Or in JavaScript.
Or in JavaScript. Properties.
Yeah.
Right, it's all methods. It's all about the methods. And in JavaScript, methods are a first-class deal, right? They can act as a method, but they can also act as an object, which is jQuery takes great advantage of that with the jQuery object once we run that ready function. So these are all these nice little wrappable objects like that. So here you're going to see all methods, always method syntax, never an object.property. We don't really see that in jQuery.
Yeah. Yeah, in core JavaScript, you know, we do have the concept of getters and setters, but like you're pointing out, in jQuery, it's just not the way it's done. And jQuery does kind of overload the syntax and create a new way of, I mean, even this method that you just showed of calling val as a method and passing a string, which means I want to set the value to the value that I'm passing into this method, is not what you would traditionally see maybe in .NET or in other languages, where you're accessing a property and using a setter to set that value.
Yeah, that's some of the first questions I tend to get from clients that start off with jQuery. Oh, they love it and they're running the methods, and then they say, hey, wait, properties? What now, happened?
One of the things that you're doing here that I wonder if is a question for some of the folks in the audience is, you've obviously got jQuery and JavaScript commingled in that example. You've got a switch statement, which is not a jQuery thing, that's just a JavaScript thing. So we can actually use Java, when we're using jQuery, we can use JavaScript still anywhere we want, right? Because we're still just writing JavaScript.
Absolutely, because that's all that jQuery is an extension to JavaScript, which makes DOM selection and these other features that we're talking about today excellent and easy to use features with JavaScript. So yeah, it's, you know, you switch between jQuery and JavaScript, and after about a day of trying out jQuery, you won't even know what's what.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Basically outside of the selector itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's all just JavaScript. So yeah, that's what makes it so great though, right? I think. Yeah. Okay, a little bit more on modifying elements. So I did the prepend and append, but now we have outside of elements. So those would have been inside of elements before. Now, if we want to do things outside of an element, so we can insert after or before, and this is going to have the same syntactical style as the last two samples. So I'm going to have my choice here. I could put the content selector, and say insert after or insert before to what selector. All right, so I could do that. Or I can do the syntax that I like better here at the bottom, which is the selector and then after, and then push the content onto it. Or before, right? After or before, either of them. And you'll see basically it works very similarly to that of the append and prepend, except that the elements here go on the outside instead of on the inside. So one more piece of syntax that we can have for any of these is the sample here at the bottom of the slide, which is I can take the selector and I could call before or after. And this works with a lot of different jQuery functions, not just these. And then I can then tell it I want to run a function to get this done. When I run this function to get this done, I'm going to pass in some content as well. So I cannot just simply do a selector and a little method or maybe a few chains, but if I need to do some really fancy things when I am, say, appending content or inserting before or after, I can then wrap that in the function, pass the content in that I want to insert before or after, and then I can actually use that inside of a function to apply to other DOM elements or whatever it is that I need to do. So you actually have this kind of a third alternative syntax in not just calling a selector and a method on it or even a chain, but actually wrapping that in a whole function as well. So that makes it extremely powerful to be able to use. There's simply not anything that you can't do when you work with it this way. If we want to go on a little bit more, things that we would need to do with DOM manipulation would be, say, copying elements as well. So we would modify elements, we would append and prepend or insert and before and after, but we also want to copy elements as well. So we could do that. Again, everything starts with the selector. And then I could call clone, and what this will do is it'll give me a deep copy of what's in that selector, so that selector and all of its children. And as you can see here on the slide, with this example, I'm actually saying take some selector and clone it, and then go ahead and append it to a second selector. So not only do I get to use basic selector syntax in here, but I get to call the clone method. So we'll go ahead and take that wrap set, make a copy of it, deep copy, and then, being that I'm using chaining, I'm going to go ahead and append that to some other selector, so selector 2 that I have. So I could take a wrap set, copy it, and shove it on something else. Right, so we get to do all of that, which is really great. So there you see the chaining, right? Great example of chaining, being able to copy and then add some elements. And all the time in web development, we need to take a chunk of elements, make a copy, and then put them somewhere else, especially when we're dynamically adding things, right? The users, we might have a grid where we keep adding rows to the grid. It's a really great way to be able to do that.
You know, somebody was asking about the differences between jQuery and these other popular JavaScript frameworks and libraries and stuff like that. I think that what you're talking about right now, appending text and HTML into the DOM, dynamically adding DOM elements and dynamically adding content inside those elements, is both jQuery's strength and weakness. It's a strength in that it makes that operation, which is inevitable, very easy, very nice. And when you need to do that, when you need to make something quick, you know, where you're just adding rows, jQuery is your library of choice. But it's also bad because it can get you into a pattern where that's the way you architect your app. And really manipulating the DOM manually with procedural code is not a good idea. You want to create a structure that's a little bit more declarative so that you have more control over your entire app lifecycle.
Right, right. I agree. Okay, so more things we want to do with manipulating DOM elements. So we can append and prepend, we can copy, but we can create brand new elements, and there's one great way to do it. This is interesting and probably very different for a lot of people. It's very JavaScripty syntax. So what we do here is, of course, we have basically the same kind of syntax for a ready function, right? So I have my dollar and my parentheses, and then I have the end matching piece. But then what we would do is, in double quotes, I can figure out what element it is that I want to create, and in this case, maybe an anchor tag. And then, once I do that, in my brackets, I can then start supplying the attributes. So here I know that things like HTML is an attribute that I might have in here, so I can set that up. I can also set the class and the reference as well. So I could set all these different attributes that go with an element, but you can do it in this kind of like super JavaScripty syntax, which is kind of nice. But again, when we want to create new elements, you can also just fall back on the append or the before or after or any of those as well. Works just fine. Now this here, creating this new element this way, will actually just simply create an element. It doesn't actually append it to the DOM or do any of that. So usually when we create an element, we actually want to append it or put it somewhere or do something with it. You may occasionally have the need to just create an element and work with it in memory, but usually we want it in DOM because the users are going to be interacting with that and data comes back from that to the server. So we can do this as a great way to create a new element with the very JavaScripty syntax, but probably going to use more of the appends and clones and other methods like that. But if I just pop over to the samples again, I should be able to find that easy in here somewhere. Oh, so here I just have a ready function. There we go. So if I add this in here without, say, the append to, so if I come in here and cut this off and we make that bigger, and then I can go ahead and view this in the browser. All right, it's gonna yell, but that's okay. I could come in here at any time in my console, run it, and then I can have this object in here. All right, so you can see it just selects something. It shows that it is an anchor, but it doesn't actually do anything with it or put it in the DOM at that point, right? So I could just run it in that really cool JavaScripty syntax. It's really good. More things that we would want to do, right, with DOM manipulation, not just adding and adding and adding. It seems that we do that all the time, though. We need to remove as well. So we have a few methods for doing that. Whatever selector we want, we can call remove, detach, or empty. A few differences between these three. If we want to do, say, just removing or deleting something from the DOM, and just call it remove, and that'll be fine, just gets rid of it. But if we wanted to do something like work with a group of DOM elements and maybe do a lot of big things to it, like grab a chunk of the DOM and then maybe start adding, say, hundreds of or thousands of rows to a table or something like that, or a lot of big data, What we might do with that is detach, call our selector, call detach, and then we could either chain this or maybe wrap it in a function with that syntax that I just showed. Detach it, work with it, add your elements removed to that detached portion, and then append it back to the DOM. So that'll help us out with performance because once again, DOM manipulation is kind of expensive. So if we detach it, work with it in a detached state, and then append it back, then we're good to go. Okay. We also have empty, which just simply empties out the contents, gets rid of them out of the DOM. So we can remove them with these three. Makes it, you know, pretty easy to do that. So we can add, we can create new things, and then we can also remove them as well. One more DOM manipulation piece is replacing. So we could take anything that we need and we could call replace all or replace with. And by now, I'm guessing everybody has noticed this giant pattern, you know, dollar selector and then method, right? So same thing again, right?
You should notice that.
If not, I'm thinking now's a good time to notice that. So once I run my selector, I can then say, take that selector and replace all, anything that matches that selector, with some piece of content, or I can replace it with some other piece of content. You have your choices. And then again, it's just more of that, you know, adding, removing, replacing, any of that kind of stuff that you need to do. You can also, you could grab it, do a selector, you can remove it and then add something back in, but the replace methods just takes two methods and rolls it into one. So it's basically getting rid or detaching something and then adding something back in. When we work with all of those elements, they create that wrapped set that we want to work with. And some things that we might want to do ourselves are create some wrappers that we might need to work with. And usually we might want to do this more with a function syntax. So we have these ways to wrap elements. So I can call wrap any of these that are on here, unwrap, wrap all, wrap inner. And basically, jQuery does a lot of wrapping to begin with, right? So just, the whole ready function, jQuery object, it's a big wrapper, right? And all of our selectors are big wrapped sets, right? But we can also do it ourselves. So we can grab a selector and we can do some wrapping. And we could do it for various reasons that we need to. So anytime that you need to just put a little piece of something around a selector, you can go ahead and do that. And it gives us a nice way to be able to work with them. What you might do is detach something from the DOM, wrap around it, and then add it back in. So that we see quite a bit. Do you use these for any reason?
I don't. I've never used the wrapping.
So they're not the most popular, but it's kind of nice to know that they're there. Right? Yeah. So that's
What kinds of objects would you wrap? Like what you're showing there, you're actually taking a jQuery object mm-hmm. and calling wrap on it. So that appears to me that it's going to try to wrap a wrapped object.
It's going to do stuff like that. But if you have a selector, you just need to get stuff wrapped up so you can use it elsewhere, or you want to add your own extra functions to it. So I might take that wrap set. And so it just takes that, adds a wrapper to it. And then I might make my own function and kind of attach it to that.
Okay.
Something like that is where I might use those for.
Yeah, I haven't actually used that.
Because some of the other functions kind of do a lot of this as well. But then again, you never know when you have that odd scenario that comes up that's a little bit different when you need to do something like that. So they're just exposing some of those underlying internals with the wrapping. So you can work with it that way. Okay, so far, we've just been adding and removing and doing stuff like that to the DOM, but we might need to dig into a particular item and then modify its attribute because HTML is very heavily dependent on attributes, because attributes describe what those elements are and allow us to present that content in a very specific way. So it's basically the same syntax again. But we get a few different functions that we can use. So we have the adder, right? Short for attribute. And again, here's where that method syntax comes into play. There's no properties. So if this were like in .NET, we would have like object.property equals something, and that would, that's how we set an attribute in .NET. But here in jQuery, we don't have properties per se. So we just call our selector, and we call the .attribute method, right, or ATTR, and then we pass in the name of the attribute that we want to change, and then the value that we want to change it to. So very, very simple. It's just a method syntax, though, instead of a property syntax.
Simple, but not intuitive, in my opinion. I remember this one just really twisting my brain when I was new to jQuery some many years ago.
It's because you're a .NET like the, person,
that's right?
Because right. A .NET person...
Even a JavaScript person wouldn't normally use that method syntax.
Possibly.
Like setting an attribute by passing in the name of the attribute and then the value of the attribute.
Yeah, I've seen it in a few programming paradigms before, but yeah, it's not the most popular thing,
sure.
Especially in the land of .NET. Is really, yeah, that's, it does get people a lot, oh, that syntax. So yeah, it's that syntax, but once you get the hang of it, it's actually becomes intuitive, right?
Yeah.
We also have a prop, right? The property. Meh. This is what I'm going to say about that. It's just a small nuance. Really, I just go for attribute, pretty much. But, you know, it's there, right? The property. There's also the removes, right? So you can remove ATTR, remove prop, and then just pass in the name that you want. And then you can add any of those attributes on or not. Now, something that people will do, attributes. So there's so many different attributes. And some of them are... like the checked or disabled. Other ones would be like maybe a background color or a style or size. And we can access all of those through ATTR and prop. But if you look, there's other selectors for them very often, right? So we can actually do like a position to get those pieces of data. But you can also use ATTR. Right, so you can do either of those. Or for like maybe the background color, we might call the CSS function to set or retrieve the particular CSS, but you can also set that here through ATTR. So the way I tend to work it is if I know there's a method that works on something specifically like CSS, then I'll use that. If there's not a corresponding method to modify that attribute, then I'll just go with ATTR. If it's just a value or something like that. And that's another one, you get val as well in HTML. So again, it's that 50 ways to do the same thing. So what I tend to go with ATTR is more of a generic modifying attributes. But if I know it's CSS or something else, I'll go with those in particular. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's something we'll do quite a bit is modify attributes as we go along. Okay. Once we've done those, some other manipulation, we need to style. So here again, here's CSS. So this is, wow, almost the same thing, right? So I have my selector, I call CSS, I pass in a style, and I give it a value. So I could pass in like background color, red. And we just did that before. So that would set the CSS, but I could actually come back here, I could do the same thing with an attribute. I could set the style attribute, and then I could set the background color. So it would end up doing the same exact things, except CSS is actually tuned a little bit to work specifically with CSS. So if you're dealing with styles, call CSS instead. All right, so that's where we might have 50 ways to do the same thing, but you want to pick this one.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, if you use the ATTR, then it's going to help you to add the style the first time. But what about when you want to add another style to it in a little while?
Yeah, what about that?
Now you're going to have to basically grab the existing ATTR and append to it. That would just be terrible.
Yeah, that would end up with just too much code. And the chaining would be a little big and kind of awkward looking, most likely.
Yeah.
So you have that. Something about good looking code again, right? So much easier to maintain. Yeah, so CSS, well, anything that you need to do CSS related, call that CSS method. It also has some other syntaxes that are nice that you can use. So you can just do the classic style and value, pass those two in. But you can also do the function syntax like I showed before. So if you need to really do lots of styling, you might call CSS, pass in the style that you want to style, and then a function with that index and value, and then you could go ahead and modify the selector to your heart's desire. Also, another one that's on the slide is I have my selector, and then I call CSS. And then in here, I have brackets, the beginning and end, and it's kind of like a JSON style, right? So I have my style colon value, and then comma, and then style colon value. So I could pass in multiple styles. In case anybody was thinking that I'm limited to just one style and I have to keep chaining .css, 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 and I see people doing that, and they'll need to make like 25 CSS modifications at once, and they'll have like 25 chains. Literally, I just saw this last week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, maybe you want to do this, right? You want to do the CSS and then just pass them all in one nice call. You can do that. And I would rather see 25 different style and values nicely formatted than 25 calls to CSS.
And I would rather see none of it. I mean, what we're really talking about here is inline styles. And that's a massive code smell. If you're doing inline styles, there's a good chance you're doing something wrong. It's just not very scalable because you're going in and you're just micromanaging the look of this element. What you'd rather be doing, and we'll get into this, is programmatically, as opposed to programmatically adding and removing styles or CSS properties, you should be programmatically adding and removing class assignments. And then those classes in your CSS file should be determining what exactly it is that class of element looks like. So for instance, you might have a list of cards in a card game, and you might have a class for the flipped card. So maybe you have a flipped class. Well, now instead of going in your jQuery and saying, I want to set the background image of this to one thing, I want it to be a little bit larger than the others, and I want it to have a red border on it. Instead of explicitly doing those three things, put those three CSS properties in a class called flipped, and now programmatically in your jQuery, just say, set this card so that it's a flipped card. That would be a better way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so while CSS is very powerful calling this method, you have these problems. The problem of inline styles, the problem of that person, you know who you are. I hope you're watching this. Because now you get to see. Right, so you could call CSS and maybe try to avoid inline styles, and then when you have to, you can call it. But as Jeremy mentioned, the classes, well, we have ways to deal with that. If you create those classes in CSS first, then you can use any of these methods, like has class, add class, remove class, and toggle class. So you can do any of these that you need to. So instead of doing a bunch of those inline styles, you can just go set up your CSS as classes as you need to ahead of time, and then you can add the whole class. You don't need 25 CSS chains. You don't even need more than one. So you can add and remove and do all of that kind of styling that you would need to do in a lot less code, and it'll be a lot more maintainable. Consider again that those inline styles, if anything changes requirements-wise and you need to change the style, you don't only need to change it in the CSS, but you'll need to change it in the script as well. Where if you use these class methods like the has class, add class, remove class, those make it a lot easier because you already have that CSS off in a .css file. You can just apply it or not apply it. So you'll have a little bit less script to deal with and less content, so less is more in this case. As you see, the selectors basically is the same. And again, when we do things like, say, adding the class, you could add multiple classes as you need to, and you can even do things like add one class and then remove the next class, which is, that's really convenient. And that's when we might have a great use case for chaining, when we're doing things like, hey, I'm going to add this class because I'm removing that one. And then, of course, just toggling. If I do a toggle, I could pass in the class that I want to toggle back and forth from. So that's kind of nice that we get to do any of these, too. Conveniently, the has class, kind of like that one. Does my selector have any class? Not if it's mine. So I could check and see if there's a particular class assigned to that element first. So I could say if it has class, then add the class, or has class, add class, remove class. You'll see that trifecta very often. So these are probably the best way to deal with CSS outside of just the .css method, which again, back to the inline styles and all that stuff. So these are real gems to work with. So if I come over here into my pages, clear out my tools. So you come in here and grab anything, and like say my paragraph, I can see if it has the class, if it has any class at all. Let's just make up a class like styled. And it's gonna tell me no, because I know I don't have this, right? So false, it doesn't have it. But if I pop back in here, let's find something that might actually have a class. Here we go. So I have a nice little page here that I could bring up. And in here, I could check to see if any of these have a class. So for example, really none of these have a class? How about this? So I could check and see if my H1 has a class. Refresh that a little bit. So if I'll see if my H1 has a class called test. Looks good, all right? So if it has that class, then maybe I'll add another class, or I don't have a class to add, so I'll just CSS it at this point. And I'll just add a background color to it just so we can see if it works. Red's always like the demo background color, the red Retina burning, CSS, red, color, red. Oh, nope. Do you see the mistake here, Jeremy?
Can you zoom in on that a little bit?
Yep.
I do not.
Me neither. I don't see why it doesn't know what the heck CSS is when it does everything else. Well, that's kind of interesting. Let's see if it has that class. How about we run a different selector? Just set the text. Let's see what's going on with this. It doesn't like this either. That's kind of interesting. All right, well, we'll come back to that, I guess. That's just kind of bizarre. All right, bizarre things happen. What are you going to do? But it does have the class. That works. That's fine.
Has class.
It has class. Not a lot, but... let's see, we did the appending and prepending the class, working with the data of the attributes, but now we can work on styling and dimensions of attributes. So again, the same selectors. With height and position, position will give you back a nice little multi-part piece of data that you could work with. And you can either set or get the width and height by calling the width or height methods, and then either passing in pixels what you want, or just calling the method dry without arguments to get the width or height, as well as the position. So they're just basics that you can use to get those. You know, most likely they're gonna be set up already, but if you need to manipulate some elements on the fly, add some things or move things around in a responsive design, you can do that, and that's fine, that'll work that way. So basically, we're at the end now, so we can go to the summary. So we've looked at element manipulation. We also looked at filters as well and attribute manipulation and how to style elements. So remember, again, things like has class and add class are much better than just CSS. And then don't forget, we want to actually use CSS as a separate thing in its own CSS file, so we don't have to worry about inline styles again. Mm-hmm. And then this whole thing, the whole chapter two, is basically chapter one, right? Selectors with methods on the ends of them. And that's really all that it is. So once we get selectors down, we know that we have these methods and what they're for, then that's basically jQuery, right?
Yeah.
Selectors and then running one or more methods off of them.
Yep. Well, and then in the second half, really, of today's course, we're going to be looking at some extended features of jQuery. Just exactly like you said, the selectors and the manipulation of the things that you select is the core of it, really. And then the things that we're going to be talking about this afternoon are pretty fun, things like events, effects, the animations, the ability to use the Ajax library in jQuery is tremendous and very popular. A lot of people use jQuery almost perhaps exclusively for the Ajax functionality.
Right.
And then we're also going to talk about the deferred object in jQuery and the concept of asynchronous programming in JavaScript in general. So kind of have a lot in store for the afternoon. Is there anything else you want to add to the morning before we take a break?
Well, not really. It's interesting in my sample here. So when I run add class by itself and it's not chained, it appears to work just fine. So I don't know what the heck is going on there.
Well, we've got a whole break here to troubleshoot it.
Right. So yeah, I know, a whole break to troubleshoot. But there it goes. So if I go adding class, there's no problems here. It gives me back, even if the class doesn't exist, it's just going to add that, right? So just class equals that, right? Class equal none or class equal whatever. So it's kind of finding it, just doesn't like when I chain it, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
Weird stuff.
Yep. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a break for meals, and let's take about a 1 hour break. And so we'll see you just after that. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for coming back.
See you soon.